Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Well, we got a lot of action this weekend to talk about. We're also going to talk to one of the fighters that's going to be participating in part of the Hall of Fame activities on the boardwalk. June 1st, Mr. Derek Webster. And we're also going to, of course, talk about the fights from all aspects. Gary Russell Jr. versus Hall Diaz Jr., Donna Stevenson versus Bobby Jack, the big upset by Warrington over in England, the landscape of things to come. So let's get down to it, and I'm going to get Scully in here, Mr. Johnny Iceman Scully, well-known historian, consultant, and boxing trainer, especially in the New England area. But, excuse me, we are definitely being graced with a lot of action, and I want to go over some of the action up there in New England with Scully. Iceman, how you doing this evening?
Everything's good. How you guys doing?
Doing great, man, doing great. First of all, how's your fighter coming along? Have you heard anything about the a possible fight for him since the last time we were on the show?
Nah, it's the craziest thing. They've been going down the list and offering the fight, and people don't want the fight. And then at the same time, Mark Ramsey, who's the head trainer for Arthur, he's got Elider Alvarez fighting Kovalev. So he's tied up with that also. So right now I'm basically just waiting for the business end of things to pull together.
Okay. Hey, man, let's talk about the big event coming up in Atlantic City. Of course, we just had Steve on the program, Steve Smoger. And he was also talking about it and talking about his participation in it. Of course, his IBA fighter just won. IBF fighter just won in Kansas, Mr. Nico Hernandez. He has his first. Minor title in four fights, but John, what's going on down in Atlantic City? Have you heard any more about events or anything of that nature?
Well, like I say, it's a really a great event. I went last year. I spent the whole weekend there. Really a good time. I know that Friday night, June 1st, they're gonna have like a meet and greet. Cocktail hour type of thing. All the people will be there and just hanging out, eating, and I know Mark Breland will be there and probably Iron Barkley. I talked to Junior Jones yesterday. He's trying to go. Marlon Starlin will probably be there. Ray Mercer will be there. Michael Spinks, and as I understand it, plenty of others. And then on Saturday, they have the event where they have an autograph signing, and I know I'm going to be there doing a like a demonstration with the mitts. Like, I'll be holding the mitts for anyone who wants to, fans or whoever. And I know there's some people from Philadelphia, some coaches from Philadelphia are going to bring some amateur kids by, and I'll probably work with them a little bit. And then they have the big dinner, lunch on Sunday, the induction ceremony, which is really good. So, I mean, like I say, if last year is any indication, I mean, it's really, really a special weekend. I would definitely advise anyone within driving distance of Atlantic City to definitely go and take part. You know, some of your favorite fighters will be there. You know, actually, it's wall-to-wall fighters and boxing personalities. So, you know, I would highly recommend it to anyone.
Another thing that kind of like to keep up with what's going on in Puerto Rico. Now they say that the island has been 95% the power has been restored. Anything from the Benitez family?
As of right now, things are pretty stable with Wilfred. You know, they've managed to come through well enough. Thanks in big part, like I say, the generator we were able to get them off a couple months ago played a big part. Like I think I may have told you before, but his sister says they're looking to bring him to Chicago, some type of treatment there, special treatment for whatever he has exactly. So they're going there. I don't know if it's experimental or what, but they're definitely looking to take him there and get him some treatment and hopefully to make his quality of life better. But for right now, things appear to be pretty stable over there, which is good.
Now, I've got to ask you about your neck of the woods, New England. You know, we're still kind of up in the air, I guess, about what's going on with the Olympics for 2020, IEBA and all that. But domestically, how's everything going up there in the amateur program? And are you still preparing just as you were prepared for the Olympics?
Yeah, we'll keep right on schedule. Just, you know, until they definitively decide something. But I know that this past week, the National Golden Gloves took place. I believe they ended yesterday. And if I'm not mistaken, New England had at least two in the finals and I think four or five in the semifinals. They had a kid, they call him Cheeks. I can't even pronounce his full name, but he's a kid out of Worcester, Massachusetts, a light heavyweight. He went to the finals at 178 pounds. He lost in the finals. And then we had a kid, I believe 123 pounds from Connecticut, actually, that he went to the finals and lost a decision also. So, you know, that's two. That's, you know, like I say, I think five or six total made it to the semifinal round, which is, you know, it takes four fights just to get to the semifinals. So that's pretty, pretty impressive. So, you know, I think we definitely have some front runners in the, you know, Olympic running. Like I said, the light heavyweight is one of them. I think we're looking pretty good at this point.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about you know, some of the action this weekend. Were you able to watch any of it or see some highlights?
Right. Well, you know, the Adonis fight. You know, I had a big interest in, just because I was actually out in Las Vegas last week and I saw Badu and Lou Duval in the gym. I think it was their last day before they headed to the Toronto. So I was able to talk to them a bit and everything. And, you know, I'll tell you, Adonis, on the one hand, he really faded. I mean, I don't know if he got hurt with a body shot or just, you know, wind or age or what, but he really faded in that fight. By the same token, he really saved himself. He made a really nice comeback in the last round, which apparently saved his title to get a draw. But I have to say, and watching it in that moment, when I saw Adonis fading as he did, I was thinking if he was ever in that position with Artur Beterbiev, I don't think there'd be any way he'd make it out of the 12th round, you know, in that situation. So, you know, age might be catching up to him. You know, his power, you know, failed him for the most part this time. But his desire actually saved him the title, because if he continued to fade, you know, there was actually a time around the 10th, maybe the beginning of the 11th round, it occurred to me that Badu might be about to stop him. I thought, you know, I could definitely see that about to happen, but he sucked it up like a champion. You know, so I don't know what this means now, if they're going to have to do it again or what, but it, you know, that wasn't the Adonis I was expecting. You know, I expected him to have more firepower, but, you know, it could be the age thing catching up with him.
Could it also be, you know, the game plan you know, Badu? I mean, Adonis usually, you know, he's usually getting guys out of there really quick. Badu made him expend a lot of energy. Like you said, it might be age. You know, I really think, you know, once again, we talk about trainers and teachers and, you know, the presence in the corner. You could see a little Emmanuel Stewart come out of Sugar in the corner, especially, I believe it was the 8th round. Might have been the 9th. When he was telling me, you got to suck it up, you know, and you know, I mean, it like I said, it kind of sounded like Emmanuel over there, because I think Sugar forgot that he was on TV. But once again, John, you know, like you talk about Arthur, you know, and you know, a trained veteran like you, a guy, you know, that's come through a bunch of wars. I mean, that veteran in the corner, how much, you know, how positive is that to a fighter, whether he's young or old?
Oh, it's super, 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 you know, positive and influential. A trainer, people need to understand, a trainer, you know, a good trainer, and I mean a guy, at that point, it's not necessarily anything at all to do with your ability to train a fighter. It has to do with your ability to talk to a fighter in those moments. And you have to know the psychology of boxing and of that fighter. And I think Angelo Dundee was a prime example of a guy who was really in tune with his fighters. He proved it with Ali, and he proved it with Sugar Ray Leonard, and he proved it with George Foreman even later in the career when he worked with George. He knew how to talk to guys in a particular situation, a particular guy in a particular situation. And, you know, a trainer could definitely, without a doubt, will you through a fight, through a round, through a tough spot, guaranteed. And, you know, so it's very important. Sometimes a trainer may go through, you know, 100 rounds in a row with different fighters, and his influence is irrelevant. Like his influence is inconsequential, but there will come that one moment when you need him to be who he is and do his thing and do his job, and it'll come out. And I always say, you take into account, like when Angelo Dundee said to Sugar Ray Leonard, "You're blowing it, son. You know, you're blowing it. You're blowing it." And that was literally the perfect thing to say, and the way he said it. And there was also when Ray fought Hagler, and right before the 11th round started, and Angelo was really excited, and he said, 6 minutes, you got 6 minutes. And you could see the look on Ray's face, like he was just overcome with emotion. And it dawned on him, like, man, I'm there. I've got two more rounds to go, and this is over. And he was so excited. And, you know, so Angelo was able to pull that out of him. A trainer knowing his fighter is a dangerous, you know, dangerous thing for an opponent. You know, you get a guy who knows how to push the right buttons and knows what to say, you know, he's a vital part of that corner. He's a vital part of that victory or defeat. So, you know, the corners were obviously, you know, influential in the fight the other night, for sure.
I see Jabron is here. Good evening, Jabron. What's going on, my man?
Not much, JK.
Well, as you can hear, I'm talking to Skelly, and I was talking about that particular round when Sugar, I thought, you know, really willed Adonis through that round and to make it. And I was talking about how you sounded like Emmanuel Stewart and the importance of having a veteran trainer in your corner. Any thoughts on that or anything you want to go over with Scully?
I mean, no, it was a good fight. The corners are important to the fighters, that, like, as Scully said. One fight that really sticks out to me is the Kovalev-Andre Ward first fight. And I feel like if it might have been somebody else in that corner with Ward that night, I don't think he might have would have pulled it off. He's a very strong will fighter and individual, but you know, this is like basically his father. You know, somebody that knows him inside and outside of the ring. So he know how to get him revved up emotionally. And like Scully said, man, it can be the difference between winning and losing.
Were either of you surprised that no one scored the fight for Adonis?
No, I wasn't surprised because you have to look at the landscape of boxing and just the whole situation. You know, boxing has a lot of politics, and this is just based upon my opinion. You have to look at it. Adonis is 40. You know, what is he really bringing to the sport? He fights maybe once a year. So, I know the judges shouldn't be thinking in that way, but I'm just saying, like, really, like, you really going to give this guy the fight, you know, that's not going to represent being the champion like I feel Badou Jack possibly would? You know, he's a very active fighter, you know, and he likes tough tasks and tough opponents. So, you know, I wasn't shocked. I wasn't shocked at all.
Scott?
Well, I'll tell you a funny thing, and this has happened to me many, many, many times watching boxing. At around the 10th round, it occurred to me, the way the fight was going and the way that Badou was turning it up, and I even said to somebody who was watching the fight with me, I said, halfway through the 10th round, I said, don't be surprised if it's a draw. Like, I literally picked it. I called it. Because it just seemed that vibe was there. The drive there, like they wanted to, you know, they weren't going to take it from Adonis, but they had to give Badou the credit that he deserved. And like I say, there was moments there, brief moments where I thought the fight was going to get stopped. I thought if Badou could have really turned it on and put it together, which is, you know, much easier said than done, I thought he could have get Adonis out of there. And on that note, I'll just say, just to point something out, I was talking the other day with someone about Sugar Ray Leonard, and I was saying that to me, Sugar Ray Leonard's greatest attribute as a boxer was his ability to dig down and when he needed it. And the Hearns fight, the first fight, is a prime example, the perfect example. Even the second fight with Hearns, the last round, was a prime example. and late rounds of the Hagler fight when he dug down. And he also stopped Benitez in the 15th. But Ray could dig down in those moments, and it's so much easier said than done. And I always point to myself. I always remember my fight with Tim Littles, 1992 in Las Vegas, and a 12-round fight. And Tim threw a lot of punches. He threw well over 1,000 punches in that fight. And I knew he'd be getting tired. And I always had planned. I said, you know, the 10th, 11th, and 12th are going to be mine. I'm going to really push it. And I never forget trying to dig down and just really put it together. And Sugar Ray Leonard actually popped in my head during those rounds. And I was saying, man, like it's he made it look so easy, and it's really not. And, you know, in those moments, you know, you have to have some greatness in you that a lot of people just don't have. And it was there for Baru, and then even after that, it was there for Adonis to dig down like superstars, like a Sugar Ray Leonard, and they just couldn't quite get it done. But all things considered, I thought a draw was going to be called, and I actually told the person with me that I think it's going to be a draw. You know, I think it was fair. It would be hard under the circumstances to take it from either guy. So I definitely thought a draw was fair for the fight.
Now, although I had no problem with it being a draw, I still thought, and you know, I might be wrong here, because I'm going to come to you with this first, Scully.
Yeah.
I thought the referee had a lot to do with the inside fighting. And if he had possibly been more of a spectator instead of a participant, the fight might have actually had a different outcome, because that's where Baru was doing his best work.
Right.
Your thoughts,
right. Oh no! Without a doubt, the idea was, you know, it was clear, and I believe, if I heard correctly, I think the announcers even made light of that. And people need to realize, like a referee can be extremely, extremely important and influential in how a fight is fought, and how a guy, you know, if you keep warning a guy, say on the inside for low blows, and even if it's not low blows, but you make him think, you give him the tone of voice that, you know, you may take points away in a close fight. Now the guy is going to abandon his body work, which maybe the referee wants that, you know, for the hometown guy. Maybe he knows the hometown guy is taking the worst of the body shots, so he can manipulate it. So, you're right. You know, referees can have a huge influence on fights. And I've actually been in fights as a boxer and as a trainer where the referee, not only was he like over biased, but it was almost like his tone of voice made it seem like he didn't like me, like he was irritated with me. Like he wasn't just telling me to back up, step back. He was telling it to me in a way like he was 1 second away from taking points away. You know, he lets you know that. So a referee is a huge, huge, vital component of a fight. And I thought, and the announcers rightfully pointed it out, I thought that his bias in the fight last night kind of showed through. And I think I won't be surprised if the commission or sanctioning body or whoever it is, somebody's going to be having a talk with that referee at some point.
Jabron, your thoughts, man?
Yeah, it definitely has an effect on the fight, and definitely that fight last night. But if you notice, he let Adonis work on the inside. That's how Baru ended up getting hurt in the 10th or 11th round with the body shot. They had him retreating for a little while. So it does play a major factor. And one that sticks out in my head more than others is definitely the Floyd Mayweather versus Ricky Hatton. I thought Cortez did not let Ricky Hatton work on the end. Anytime he hit Floyd to the body and tried to follow up, Cortez was breaking it up.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, we did have a very interesting weekend. Warrington upset Shelby due to cuts above both eyes. John, I know you haven't quite, you know, experienced anything like that, but we've seen a lot of fighters fight through. You know, I don't know, you know, there was some talk that, you know, he could have went on, but, you know, the referee chose to stop the fight. But, you know, despite the Warrior being wanting to take out on his shield, John, I mean, how dangerous is that, you know, for a fighter when he has cuts over both eyes? Now he's got that scar tissue accumulated and whatnot. Would you suggest the fighter, you know, going on with his career once he's, you know, accumulated the scar tissue above his eyes and that becomes, you know, a major hazard?
Right. You know, it's a funny thing. Like, I can remember two fights in a row that I was cut really, really, really bad in. And in the corner, in each fight, the referee at different points came over and expressed concern. Now, that tells me he's looking to maybe stop the fight. Grant, he's looking for my reaction. I always stand by that. A referee throws it out there because he's looking for your reaction. He wants to see if you're a passive person in the moment or you're an angry person in the moment. And in both instances, I believe part of the reason I was able to keep going is because I made in no uncertain terms, I let them know that I wanted to go, continue. Now, after a fight, when you get a guy, and I always think of, as an example, you could think of Chuck Wepner. You know he's going to get cut. And there was other guy, I believe Bobby Chacon, you know, used to cut bad. And there's been different guys over the last 30 years that come to mind. You know they're going to cut. That is a huge, huge detriment. It's a huge obstacle. It's a huge, you know, it's almost like going in with a weight, you know, like the other guy is free and clear, but they put a 20-pound weight on your back before the first bell even rings. Professional boxing, especially at the world-class level, is hard enough without the fact that you realize and you accept the fact that you're probably going to get cut at some point, especially if you're fighting a sharp counterpuncher and a guy that's a sharp puncher and he's going to cut you. I couldn't see myself, if I had reached that point, I couldn't see myself honestly continuing a career because it would just be too much of an uphill climb. Everybody's different. Everybody fights for different reasons, but a guy who cuts like that, he's always going to have that detriment. And once you become a bleeder, it's almost impossible to stop it. Like you don't just one day wake up and you're not a bleeder anymore. You know, that's going to stay with you until your career is over. So, it's hard to tell someone to retire, but if you know you're going to go in with world-class opposition and you're going to run into that obstacle every single time, it gets to a point where I don't even think it's worth it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially, you know, with your eyes, you spoke of Chuck Wepner. Yeah, I remember that fight. It looked like more like a surgery room than it did a ring before it was all over. But, you know, as you said, I mean, you know, everyone knew that Webster was going to cut, I mean, Wepner. John, I know you have to go, so why don't you tell everyone about, how they can catch you on social media, anything you want to talk about, Atlantic City, whatever, before you leave us tonight.
Well, like I say, June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Atlantic City, we have Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame. I assure you it's a spectacular event. Anyone in the New York, Philadelphia, New Jersey area, Connecticut, I would definitely recommend coming up for it. It's a spectacular weekend. And then the week after, literally the following weekend, we have the International Boxing Hall of Fame in Canastota, which is, in my eyes, the greatest weekend of the year in all of boxing. And I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Jabron, I don't know if you've been there, but if you don't come, I mean, you're going to be missing out on so much. I can't even express it to you. I would highly recommend that you come and hang out with us. And then also in July, we have myself and Mark Breland, among a couple others, but Mark and I are definitely the first two that are committed to this. There's an event in Toronto, Canada. If you have any listeners in Toronto, there's an event there. There's an amateur boxing weekend, July. I believe it's the weekend of the 21st. And Mark and myself are going to be up there as guests, and we're going to be handing out trophies and talking to the boxers and different things like that. So if anyone is in that area, I would recommend coming up to that. But Jabron, let's talk soon. I'd love to see you get up to Canastota. You'll be, as they say, a kid in the candy store. You won't believe it. And
I can't make Canastota, but I will see you next week in Atlantic City, because Smoga is supposed to have some tickets for me.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, you'll like it then. Are you coming for the whole weekend?
Probably Friday and Saturday.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So yeah, definitely touch base with me and we'll hang out.
Okie dokie.
All right, sounds good. So I guess I will be talking to you guys next week.
All right, Scully, you have a great week, man, and we look forward to talking to you next Sunday, man.
Yes, sir. Okay. Thank you, guys. All right.
As everyone knows, Scully always drops by every Sunday. Jabron, I'm going to get one of the boxers that's participating in the event June 1st. Why don't you kind of go over with the audience what happened this weekend as far as Shelby and Warrington and possibly its effect, on the outcome of the Gary Russell fight or its repercussions within the featherweight division. And I'll get the guest on for the day. Jabron?
Yeah. Did you guys touch on the Gary Russell fight?
No, we're going to touch on it during this hour here, during our last
okay.
hour.
No problem.
So,
well, the question is, from this weekend, can Badu Jack Korea take another draw? He's been in some tough battles, and it just seems that he get into these fights where, you know, it's tough, very, very tough to really score a lot of rounds, especially with his style. He's an inside fighter.
Hello. Yes.
Hello. I think I got dropped there for a minute. But let me introduce our guest to our audience. This is one of the gentlemen that's going to be participating in the events during the Atlantic City Hall of Fame weekend. And this is Mr. Derek Webster. He's 25-1. He's a super middleweight, and he's from Glassboro, New Jersey. Derek, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great, doing great. Now, Jabron, you want to start with talking with Mr. Webster. He's a fighter, like I said, out of Grassboro, New Jersey. He's a southpaw, 35, and he is booking to actually, I believe he has a couple minor titles, but he's definitely fighting for a vacant super middleweight title for the American Boxing Federation during the events on June 1st. So you want to kind of take it from there?
Yeah, right now I'm currently the IBO USBO champion and the WBF Intercontinental champion.
Well, that sounds great. So you can tell our audience a little about yourself. Like, how did you get into the sport of boxing? And let us know about your team, your trainer, and possibly if you have a conditioning coach. Just give us a little update on you.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is, like, I didn't start boxing until I was 24. It was something I just picked up. I honestly say boxing chose me. My trainers is Denny Brown. My strength and conditioning coach is Robert Rossi. And we're based out of we got a gym in Camden, New Jersey. Right now, we're looking, you know, to get into the ring with some top contenders, you know, to get the big fight. And you know, I mean, we're working extremely hard. We are fighting June 1st in Atlantic City. We're headlining Hall of Fame weekend. And I'm looking forward to doing giving the fans a great show.
With that being said, do you know anything about your opponent? And if you do, what are some things you can tell us about him?
I don't really know much about him. I do know he's from Mexico. I know that he's a veteran. Supposed to be very crafty. A real hard nosed guy, but. One thing that I know is that he's never been in the ring with somebody such as myself, 6'4", southpaw, with speed, power, and the movement that I got. So, I mean, he's going to have a lot of questions to answer come June 1st.
Now, as you move up in the rankings and we'll start to see stiffer competition, how would that play in your game plan, whereas to now in your career, you know, sometimes you might not know who the opponent is or have a lot of tape on the opponent. How will you be able to adjust to the stiffer competition?
Well, my training doesn't change. You know, my whole career, I've been in the ring with my opponents always change last minute. So with my preparation, you know, we train for the boxers, we train for awkward guys, we train for power punchers, you know, so every round I could come out a different fighter, so my adjustment comes pretty easy.
And part of your training, are you more of the more modern age or you're more old school, a lot of calisthenics, a lot of, you know, not a lot of machinery, like what's like your workout regimen?
My workout, I mean, like, of course, you got your everyday routine, you know, in the gym. But, I mean, like, I do a lot of running. I use a lot of resistance bands, like, so I can learn to move my own weight around, you know. So I'm not a big swimmer, but I do a lot of water techniques, things of that nature.
Oh, man, that sounds great. It's good to hear a fighter that stick to the basics, because nowadays, you know, everybody, I understand technology does help in some ways, but, you know, everybody's on the more modern stuff instead of sticking to the basics of boxing. You know, they get so caught up in fitness that they don't focus on the technical aspects of boxing.
Well, that's because a lot of fighters these days is worried more about appearance, how they look. You know, everybody want to pack on muscle and they want to look a certain way, but looks don't help you win a fight. You know what I mean? Like, you can look intimidated, but as soon as you get hit, all of that go away. So, you know, my trainer is pretty much old school, and we like you said, we stick to the basics. And there's never a fight that you see me exhausted or running out of gas. You know, if I want to hit somebody with a 10-punch combination, I don't got to worry about if I'm going to be exhausted after that.
Most definitely. So since you got into the game late, before getting into the sport, was you a fan of the sport? And if you was, who were some of the guys that inspired you and that you looked up to?
Well, the funny thing is, as a kid, my neighbor was actually Tony Thornton, the postman. He was actually my neighbor, so I used to watch him run and train and everything like that. But I really never had that thing for boxing like that. I just didn't. I was more into music and basketball. You know what I mean? And then as time went on, I became a big fan of Roy Jones, which is now, like, you know, Roy Jones is like a father to me now. We have a great relationship, a great bond. Like, every time, actually, when I fight on the first, he's actually flying in to work my corner. So he became my very first interest, and it just blossomed from there.
Wow. Since you're into music, does that help you in any way with your boxing, like far as rhythms and being able to catch guys' rhythms?
I think it's more of a calm for me than anything. You know, I was singing before I was boxing, so, you know what I mean, even during my training camp, you know, I got my old school music playing. I'm not really into all that today stuff, you know, all that nonsense that's being played on the radio, so I still listen to my old school. And it keeps me calm, you know what I mean? I really don't, because a lot of times when you get too excited, then you're wasting energy. So I try to stay as calm as I possibly can.
Man, it sounds great. You sound like a very grounded boxer. We need more gentlemen in the sport like you. And hopefully when you hang them up, you can be a great ambassador for the sport. And with that being said, I'll throw it to my host, JK.
Derek, I was wondering, do you have time to discuss some of the weekend's action with us?
Sure. I mean, I actually caught up on it today because I was so busy into my own training camp. you know, I've been training twice a day myself, so I missed the fight yesterday, but I caught up on it today.
Well, we can talk about your division, the super middleweight division. It has become really highly competitive, especially within the last 2 years. What are you hoping? I know you want that big fight, but are you hoping that possibly the exposure that you get from the Hall of Fame bout could propel you into you know, one of those positions where you could possibly be a mandatory, at your advanced age, how are you putting yourself on a timetable?
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm putting myself on a timetable because, again, I mean, like, I didn't turn pro till 2009, so, you know, I mean, I don't have a lot of wear and tear on me to where a lot of these guys is breaking down now. You know what I mean? That's been fighting since they were kids. They're the ones breaking down, not me. Like I said, I had a microphone in my hand before all of this. So my body didn't take all the beatings that a lot of these other guys did. I'm not really banking on the Hall of Fame per se to skyrocket me because my name's already out there. You know, it's just a matter of me just waiting my turn. I would say. I watch a lot of fighters, they rush themselves and they get rushed just over some money, you know what I mean, to where they never end up making it to that pivotal moment that they want to make it to. Me, I'm already financially well off, you know what I mean, so I don't have to rush myself to do anything at all to feed my family. The Hall of Fame, I do plan on putting on a great show in front of people that, like I said, that already know my name. And I'm just hoping that, you know what I mean, like maybe they'll, like, you know, I can get put on some bigger cards, maybe some TV events. There's already some talk about that now. I'm just hoping that does at least kick open the door for me, and then I'll take it from there. Because, like, my division right now is pretty, like you said, it's competitive, but it's pretty much wide open. You know, so I'm getting in exactly where I fit in it. You know what I mean? And I'm right there where I need to be. I'm not too far from getting my shot, but I am looking forward to it.
When you talk about the part that you don't have to rush yourself because you've had another successful career, I imagine that does bring about a lot of mental stability, and also you're already at that mature age where you're an adult. You're a man. A lot of these kids are just growing into your manhood. Do you think that's also a part of your advantage that you take into the ring?
I think I'm able to. That very well could be. You know what I mean? I think that I could outsmart a lot of these guys and like get into their mind, because it seems like that's the way my fights go anyway. Like before I end up knocking anybody out, I always get into their mind and I have them going back to the corner arguing with their trainer. You know what I mean? Once I get the corner arguing, I know that I got the fight won. So I think that I'm able to outsmart these guys. And then another thing is, like, you know, a lot of people may look at, oh, well, he's 35. So they look at me as a older guy. And then with my talent ability, they think I've been fighting for probably just as long as they do. And then when they get in there with me and they realize I got fresher legs than them, I can get out the way of certain punches and come back with a lot of different combinations, they get discouraged from that. And that's another reason why I do believe that I have not got the bigger fights, because I'm a threat to a lot of these guys.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this weekend's action. Now, you know, you're at the age of 35. We saw Donna Stevens, who has been a champion for quite some time. Now he's at the age of 40. We saw how he started to break down in the later rounds. What did you think about that fight? And, you know, do you see do you take fights like that when you see guys, you know, older than you or around your age, and you see what happens to them? Does that inspire you to train harder, or are you already of that mindset?
Well, I already have that mindset. I mean, like, my trainer always, he has instilled in me from the beginning to always stay ready. You know what I mean? So even after a fight, I'm right back in the ring. Watching that fight, and also watching Adonis Stevenson for quite some time, anytime past a certain round, his output always declines. It has always declined. You know what I mean? He packs, because he's a fighter that depends on his power. He's not the best boxer in the world, but he has power that can bring him into where he can end the fight a little bit earlier than his skill set can. So, you know, I feel as though, like I said, I caught up on a fight today. I feel as though the fight, it was very competitive. You know what I mean? Like it was a chess match in the beginning, and then Badu Jack, you know, he picked it up, and then there was times where Adonis picked it up. So it was back and forth action throughout the whole fight. I think they put on a hell of a show. You know, it could have went either way. It could have went either way, but it ended up being a draw.
Now, I know LeBron wanted to talk about the Gary Russell fight, and you mentioned something a little while ago when you were talking about like throwing a 10-punch combination, and we saw Gary do that during a lot of his rounds. But how much energy does it take to throw a 10-punch combination and then, you know, still have to follow up the round when you have a guy that's, you know, constantly pressing you? Or are you
it's the preparation. I wouldn't say it's so much of the energy, but when you prepare yourself to fight that way, it's something that normally it's something that normally just that just happens. You know, like on a heavy bag, my trainer has like different levels for body shots. I'm a 6'4" guy. In my division, I'm going to fight a lot of short guys. So, you know, he tells me, well, if you touch down here, which is a lot lower, if you train yourself to go to drop down a little bit lower, when it comes time for you to hit somebody where you need to hit them at, it's like it's nothing. It's instant because you train yourself that way. You know, I've had a chance to meet Gary Russell maybe 3 times in my career, and he trains that way. The boys, like, I mean, his work ethic is unbelievable. His hand speed is tremendous, but he trains himself to throw those type of punches. So I wouldn't say his energy is just that when you prepare yourself to do something like that, it happens naturally, especially on the days where, you know, where we've all been there to where we don't even feel like training. When you don't feel like training, that's the time where you want to push yourself and give it your all. Because you can wake up in the gym one day and feel the same way. I mean, the day of a fight and feel the same way. You may feel flat. You may feel like you don't feel like fighting, but you got to push through. So I think it's more about preparation.
Jabron, you wanted to talk about this fight, Gary Russell against the young hungry Mr. Ho Diaz Jr. Your thoughts? With what Mr. Webster said, and your thoughts of the fight, we can kind of chop it up.
Well, like I was saying on last week's show, going into the fight, I thought, you know, Gary would be able to edge it, but it was going to be a rugged fight that Diaz wasn't going to lay down. It was going to be a tough competitive fight, and basically that's what we ended up getting. You know, it's just that Diaz is just not ready yet for, you know, that upper echelon. He still has some more work to do. And like you said, you know, a lot of fighters rush. You know, he could have been more patient and worked this way up and probably could have put on a better performance maybe a year or two down the road from now with Gary Russell, you know, because Gary will be getting older too, and this guy will be, you know, getting more experience and primed up. But overall, you know, it was a good fight, and I'm glad both of the gentlemen came out, you know, with no major injuries or anything of that such. And even though Diaz lost, I still think he has a bright future ahead, and Gary also.
And like if I could second that, I learned from Andre Ward himself. Andre Ward is like a big brother to me, and Andre told me in his career, he's the one that told me, don't let nobody ever rush you. Don't ever let nobody rush you, because at the end of the day, people just see dollar signs. But he said when he fought Allen Green, I don't know if y'all remember when he fought Allen Green, but he said, like, you know, the first time the fight came around, they offered him a certain amount of money. And he said he knew he could beat Allen Green, but it wasn't worth the fight. The money wasn't worth the fight. So when the fight came around the second time, he beat Allen Green and ended up making double the money. So sometimes when you just sit and you wait for the right moment, it's more beneficial for you versus a lot of people just want to be on TV. A lot of people want to just say, oh, I did this and I did that. But then when you don't succeed and doing what people are pushing you to do, you're the one that got to go home with that scratch on your record. You know what I mean? Not the ones that push you. They go away with a check because you fought and you risked yourself. But you're the one that got to take that scratch on your record if you don't succeed with someone pushing you into a situation that you may not be ready for.
You mentioned being 6'4". Now,
yes, sir.
You know, a lot of people, you know, might consider that, you know, a disadvantage, especially as you said. I mean, you know, most of the fighters that you're fighting are shorter than you. How does that affect your training? Not only, you know, the physicality of thinking that people are, you know, are going to try to, of course, go downstairs, chop you down. So what influence does that have on your training? And also, you spoke of sitting down on your punches. How does that also alter your training methods when you know that most of the time you're going to be fighting someone shorter than yourself?
So you mean versus me fighting someone shorter or versus someone taller?
Well, I mean, come on, how many guys are you going to fight that's taller than you?
I mean, not many, but I mean, like, but again, like, I mean, that's what my trainer trains me for, you know, like, under a training gym, you got a bunch of different trainers. So I've had other trainers come to me and say, well, you 6'4", why does your trainer have you fighting like a little guy? Because I have to fight little guys, but at the same time, you know, like, I encounter things to where I help other guys. Like, I've actually been encountering some 6'5 guys, you know, that's headed to the Olympics, or that's in Maryland there's a 6'5 southpaw, in Philly there's a 6'4 southpaw. When these guys are just as tall as me, or they may have a little better box than me, I have to learn how to fight on the inside. Well, that's what a little guy's got to do. Got to learn how to fight on the inside. You know what I mean? So it helps my trainer. It just makes me more of a complete trainer, because when guys throw punches and I can get as low as they can get and get underneath their punches and I can steal something while I'm down there, they wouldn't expect for me to do that at all. So again, that's another thing that discourages them, because they like, wait a minute, he's up here, but then when I shoot something at him, he's down here, and then he still hit me while he's down here, and I still can't get him. The difference with me is my hands and my feet, they work together. And a lot of people don't take accountability for fighters' feet. The feet will put you in position to get the shots off.
Let's talk about some of the possible opposition that you could go up against. Let's start with the Chalo twins. I believe it would be Jamel.
Well, no, they're 160.
One of the Charlos, they're
160.
And one is a different weight class, right?
Yeah, one's at 54, one's at 60.
Okay. Let's talk about the big bad boy then, Triple G. What did you think about him?
He's also at 160.
Well, but I mean, you know, Triple G, I think would be everyone's talking about him moving up and not being able to make that weight, especially at his age. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about two guys possibly the same. As a matter of fact, he might be younger than Triple G. But if you would get that tall. What do you think about his style when you talk about fighting somebody taller than you?
You can knock anybody out. If you watch Triple G's fights, and it's just my opinion, when you watch Triple G's fights, when you stand in front of him, he knocks you out. But he struggles with boxers. He struggles with movement. Danny Jacobs is one guy that exposed him. You know, like he struggles with movement. Period. I think that's why Jermell wants to fight him. Jermell's not going to stand there and allow him to get, and take that punishment. Jermell's going box is going boxing. You know what I mean? Like when you box him, you know, you just get you see a different Triple G. When the guy from Philadelphia, Gabriel Rosario, when he fought him, you know, Gabriel gave him movement. He hurt Gabriel a couple of times in the fight, but Gabriel went the distance with him. You know, he doesn't do well with movement at all. But that goes for anybody. Any boxer that stands in front of somebody, you're giving yourself a chance to get knocked out.
Jabron, you want to talk about the super middleweight class?
Well, they have the tournament supposed to be wrapping up. The finals, George Groves in the finals. So everybody right now is kind of idle. You got Roberto Ramirez and James DeGale, and David Benavidez. I mean, and Chris Eubank Jr. bouncing back. But I think with these tournaments, and because they're saying they're going to renew the contracts to keep the tournaments going, and they're going to add more divisions, I think that is a great thing for gentlemen like yourself that you can be able to jump up and have an opportunity to get exposure and possibly to grab one of the major belts. What are your thoughts on the tournament? Have you kept
up
with
it? If I got the call, I'm there. I've been wanting to fight with George Groves when he had the WBA title, but he was locked into the tournament. You know, Eubank Jr., I don't see him as a threat. I mean, at the end of the day, you want to fight these elite guys to get where you need to get to. So it's not a, like I said, for me, it's just an anybody with the right situation type of thing. You know what I mean? If it's the right situation, I'm taking it.
So what's the details on your fight? Which night will you be fighting, and what's the approximate time?
I'm headlining the first night, which is June 1st, is when the Hall of Fame starts, June 1st. I'm headlining that night at the Claris Casino in Atlantic City. I'm the main event, of course. So I'll probably be fighting about, like, maybe, depending on how the rest of the fights go, between 10 and 11 o'clock.
Well, hopefully you come out victorious, and hopefully I'll get to see you there, because I'm trying to come through. So,
okay.
With that being said, I'll throw it to JK, and hopefully we can get you back on the show so you can give us some details on your victory.
Definitely, I appreciate it.
Well, hey, thank you so much, Derek, for joining us tonight, man. We really appreciate you taking some time, and we look forward, like Javon said, to having you back on the show after your victory at the Hall of Fame. And before you go, why don't you tell our audience about any social media you may have, and give us your final thoughts for the evening.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You can find me on Facebook, simply Derek Webster, D-E-R-R-I-C-K. Same thing as Instagram, Derek Webster. You know, and I just appreciate, you know, everybody that supports me, whether I know you guys, whether I don't know you guys, whether, you know, I just appreciate all the support. And if you don't know about me, just pay attention, and I'm pretty sure I can make you a fan. But I appreciate everybody.
All right, well, thank you so much, my man. And as I said, we look forward to talking to you again. And we'll find out about that alias, take it to the bank. So we're going to leave that for your next appearance. So
okay,
we
no
have
problem.
Something to start. All right, so you have a great night.
All right. You too. Good night.
Good night. That was Mr. Derek Webster. As he said, he will be headlining the first night down in Atlantic City. So, Jabron, that means that you will be heading to Atlantic City next weekend?
Yep, that's what it's looking like, JK. I'll be rolling down there.
Well, any information that you need about Steve or anything, let me know. So, wish I could grab a flight and catch you guys there. But one of these days, I know we'll all be out in Las Vegas. that might be a good thing. That does seem like it's going to be a great weekend. And one thing that you don't have to worry about is our tickets to the fight. So, yeah, make sure you enjoy yourself, and you know, let's talk a little bit about the Gary Russell, Hol Deas Jr. I know, you know, we covered it just a little bit, but I was thinking, as Derek said, and you know, when I was talking about the output of Gary Russell, I don't know if you heard the corners in between rounds, but I believe it was in the third round, the end of the third round, maybe the beginning of, maybe the end of the fourth, when Gary came back to the corner and he said to his father, "I think I hurt my hand." And Coach Russell came back with, "Don't worry about that. Speed kills." Did you hear that exchange in the corner?
No, I didn't hear that.
It seemed after that, I mean, you know, as Gary even mentioned after the fight, you know, that he had hurt his hand. Did you notice how he seemed to change levels with his speed after the fourth round?
Yeah, I did. And I also seen him being susceptible to that straight right hand.
Well, so what do you say?
I mean, if he in there with somebody with a little more experience, man, it might have been a little tougher night than it was. I mean, I know it's boxing. You're going to get hit. But it was times where he was on the back foot. You know, Gary was on the back foot, and just when you thought Gary was dominating out of nowhere, Deas was just coming. He was like Margarita, but he was having flashes of Margarita, just kept coming.
Okay, now, thinking about that now, you know that Gary said that he would want the winner of Marez Santa Cruz. Your thoughts? I mean, because neither one of them, both of them are going to be more or less in your chest, and both of them have pretty good right hands.
Well, actually, Abner's been boxing more lately, as of late. He's been bouncing on his toes, you know, so it'll be a very interesting fight. But once again, you know, he's saying he hurt his hand, so we ain't no telling how long he's going to be out. We might not see him no more 2018. So once again...
Well, I'm trying to get him on Tuesday night show to see if we can, you know, to see how serious that hand is. But he didn't, I mean, hopefully he's thinking that everything's all right. I mean, it's already late.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So depending on the severity of the injury, we might not see him the rest of this year.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope that, or, you know, it won't be due to a hand injury. But that being said, if his hands are healthy, and he wants to have another fight this year. After this, I don't know who the mandatory, who is mandatory, is mandatory would be after Mr. Diaz. What are you thinking? Possible unification bout? What's going on? We might have too many champions in that division once again for unification. But what are there? Three champions there?
And Gary's division?
Yeah.
No, you have 1, 2. You have 4. Gary is the WBC. Leo Santa Cruz is WBA. Now Josh Warrington is the IBF, and Oscar Valdez is WBO. So, I mean, he can look like you said. He can go for a unification between the winner of Abner Mara Santa Cruz.
What would you think about a possible Warrington? Russell matchup.
In order for that, he gonna have to hop on the plane. He gonna have to go across the pond if you want to make that. If you want to get really make some money for that fight.
But I hate to use the term, but is it a safer fight than the winner of Mara Santa Cruz?
I mean, Mara Santa Cruz, he could make more money if he went that direction. He could definitely make more money if he went that direction, and he won't have to go across the pond.
You see, that's kind of what I'm skeptical at, you know. Would he make more money? Would he actually make more money fighting the winner of Mara Santa Cruz? I'm sure he would make it would make for a more popular fight, and I'm sure he could get paid due to the TV, but I mean, England, the first international title. We know how rabid the English fans are. You don't think he could put this in a stadium in England and make more money, make just as much money?
Yeah, and that'll be the easier route because the guy only got six KOs out of 27 fights. So, I mean,
yeah,
that'll be the easier route.
I'm thinking financially the Euros, and then you come back with two straps. And you can demand twice as much money for a fight of that magnitude.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a good idea. That's a great idea. So he can have more leverage.
Precisely. I mean, that's it, when I listen to Layman and Scully, I be listening, I know I'm a little old, but some of it sinks in, especially when you talk about the dollar. You know, so.
Oh, yeah, JK. What's your thoughts on Badu Jack's career as far as, like, can his career take another draw?
I would say definitely not. But on the other hand, he makes for exciting TV. The thing of it is he also kind of makes for predictable TV. And he needs a major victory. I mean, this is not to say nothing of, to do with his ability, but the fact that I think what he's losing is the drawing ability of the fans. People now, it's almost where you don't expect him to win. As Scully was saying, you thought about the 10th round, the first thing you thought about was, it looks like this might be a draw. You didn't really think about him winning, even though he was at that particular point in the fight, he was winning the rounds, and he was winning the rounds much bigger than Adonis Stevenson had won the rounds. But you know how finicky promoters are, and you know how finicky the boxing public are, especially the casual fans. Hardcore fans are just, kind of like us discussing on, it's another heartbreaking draw. I mean, we want to see Badu Jack back in the ring. But once again, there's nothing to say that, we want to see him in the ring against, Kovalev or Benavidez or, I'm afraid now of his drawing ability and that he has no leverage when it comes to the bigger fights.
Well, JK, do you want to see a rematch, and do you think the boxing public want to see a rematch?
No and no. Even though I think Badu Jack would win a rematch, I think Adonis is too much of a businessman, especially when he has guys like Sugar Hill in his corner and whatnot. I think he's going to try to find a bigger payday because he realizes that he's at the twilight of his career. And I think, I don't think Badu Jack will provide that type of revenue for him.
Well, so, looking at the landscape of the division, do you think Adonis going to go looking for a safer fight, or he's going for the most lucrative fight?
I think he's going for the most lucrative fight. He knows.
Even if that's possibly getting knocked out, like if, they try to make the Kovalev fight. Like, if Kovalev get past Alvarez and, they try to make the Kovalev fight, do you think he would be Adonis chicken son, as Kovalev say?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of gonna go with. If I was Adonis' team, this is what I would do. Okay, he can pick a safer fight, but is he going to make the money that he's going to make with the Kovalev fight? No. If he takes a rematch with Body Jack, we saw what happened in the 12th round. It was the fact that he stayed on his feet in the 12th round that got him a draw. So I don't think, he'd want a rematch with Body Jack unless he was going to take most of the purse. So I'm thinking, maybe a Benavidez would make a good match in Canada. If it came down to it, it would be Kovalev. But I think Kovalev is a last resort. So I think we might be looking at a Benavidez Adonis match.
Wow. Scully will be at work.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Benavidez is not a worthy opponent or that he's not going to suffer the same fate under Benavidez as he would Kovalev, but I think that would be at least in his mind, a much better fight for him to take as far as the odds of him winning. Like I said, he already knows that Body Jack can knock him out, and I don't think he's going back for that.
I think Kovalev can beat Stevenson.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt, but I just don't think that Stevens, wants to fight a Kovalev unless the money has to be right, because I know, and after his performance last night, Stevenson knows, that Kovalev is not the ticket. That's what I'm saying. Kovalev would be a last resort. Even though the boxing public is going to clamor for a Kovalev Adonis fight.
Correct. They will. And they have history, so it'll be big in the media. But I don't know about the attendance. Like, in order for it to be a big fight where we're talking attendance, it would have to be in Canada.
When's the last time Adonis came out of Canada? I mean, you haven't even seen. Where have you seen him ringside in the United States?
That's a good one. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
well, that might, this is just speculation, but it might have to do with some of his history. Maybe he's on probation. He can't leave.
We had great action this weekend. Had an upset with Warrington. What do you think about Warrington's skills besides the paper mache that holds Selby's eyes together?
Well, I mean, it's kind of, hard to say. I mean, he did what he had to do, but he wasn't in there with a great opposition. Like, Selby looked old and sluggish. Like, he didn't look like himself, you know, the Lee Selby that was coming up in the ranks. But, you know, unfortunately, it wasn't his night.
We have Tuesday, we have Miss Shelley Vincent coming on the show. She won her last fight. We're trying to keep up with some of the female fighters that have been on the show. What did you think about her last performance?
I didn't get to see it.
Oh, man, see?
And I've watched a lot of women's boxing lately, but I missed that fight.
Well, we know Clarissa Shields is coming up. There's some speculation about her and Hammer, of course. Your thoughts, man, on some of Clarissa Shields and any upcoming fights that we have or haven't talked about?
Well, I would say what I'm looking forward to is Bud Crawford. I want to see how he acclimates to the new division, to see if his power is going to carry up. Because, you know, you can say all you want about Jeff Warren. He's a tough, rugged guy. You know, he might not have the greatest boxing skills, but he's an awkward fighter. And if you ask any great fighter that has fought awkward fighters, they will tell you they are some of the hardest fights to be in because of the awkwardness. You know, like, take, for example, a guy like Ricardo Mayorga. He's an awkward guy. Like, you know, you'll beat him, but it's going to be an ugly fight because of his style. Another tough, rugged guy was Sakia Obika. That was another awkward guy that was just tough as nails. And man, he fought up in age. Like, that guy was older and still being tough tasks for guys, you know, in his later 30s. In that division, come on now. You know, you don't have guys at that age still being very competitive in that type of division. So, I'm just excited, man. I just can't wait to see what happens, man, because this welterweight division is really blowing up. And you got Terrence Crawford coming in the door, and then hopefully they can put ink on that paper for Danny Garcia and Showtime, Sean Porter, so we can get this welterweight division rolling. And then you got Errol Spence right around the corner fighting his mandatory. So things is looking great for 2018. And I'm just excited, JK. I can't wait. And I'm hearing rumblings about this Joshua Deontay Wilder fight is getting so close. Ah, I can't wait.
Are you teasing us? Are you playing Eddie Hearns on us, or do you think that this fight is really going to happen? And do you think it's going to be, you know, like as Deontay Wilder said, one match, no rematch clause, let's get it on here in the States? What do you think?
I don't know the clauses, but Just be on the lookout between October and December.
And one last prediction before we get out of here. are we going to see Canelo in September against Triple G, or will it be another opponent?
Oh, man. That's tough for me to say right now because I don't have no insight on the situation of his surgery yet. So when I get some information on how that surgery went and how his recovery going, then I would be able to say that he'll be fighting Triple G in September. But in my mind, I think it's going to be next May because I think somehow he's going to get like a warm-up fight because he's been out of the ring for so long. Plus, having surgery, I think he's going to go a different direction.
All right, well, the only fight that you didn't mention that was coming up, you mentioned the Crawford fight, you mentioned Leo Santa Cruz, Adam Morris fight, Jermell Charlo, Austin Trout. We saw Austin Trout, he was at the fight last night. Is Austin Trout the luckiest opponent in the world?
Man, he's a dog, man. I mean, if you go into war, you want somebody like him on your team, I'm trying to tell you. You know, that's Austin No Doubt Trout, man. Like, you know, you never can count him out. And I think he's going to shock a lot of people. It's going to be a tough fight. I don't think Charles is going there and knock him out like he's been doing everybody else. I think this is going to be a real tough fight. Like, you know, I listened to an interview with him last week, and this dude, I've never seen Austin like this. Like, he was scaring me when I was hearing him talk. I'm like, woo, wow. He's really pumped up. So I'm not saying that, oh, he's going to go in there and wipe Charlo out. I think we're going to see fireworks. It could possibly be a fight of the year.
Who do you think learns the most from Austin's previous fight with Jamal? Does his brother profit the most from his experience, or does Austin profit the most from the experience of fighting the other brother?
I mean, I think it's 50-50. It's pretty much even because since that fight, we've seen a different Trout, like show us dimensions to his game that we never knew that he had. Because, like for instance, in the Jared Herd fight, you wasn't expecting to see Trout trading with a big guy like that and showing some inside work instead of being on the bicycle, being on the outside, using lateral movement. We saw him dig deep, and so he's shown us different dimensions to his game, and I feel like that he has to prove and could be the last chance for him. So it's going to be a tough-looking fight, and that's my opinion. I really think it's going to be a tough fight.
Well, we do have a caller. He's from the 313 area code. Would you introduce yourself and tell us whatever remarks or questions you have about any of the fights that we've talked about?
Hey,
Yes. Hello, Mr. James. It's Tim calling from Detroit.
Hey, man, what's going on?
I'm doing fine. Just, man, you know, I'm just online, man, just saying how good that I'm enjoying the show, man. Really, I am. And, you know, man, hey, man, listen, man. No doubt, Trout, man, he's going to prevail. Yeah. And, man, you know, just want to say, man, I'm really enjoying the show, man. It really helped me out, man. Give me a whole lot of insight on this on boxing, you know. And I really really appreciate the show, man. Fusionist Corner, right?
Well, it's the weekend wrap on Sunday with the Fusionist Corner with K-9 on Tuesday. But
okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Hey, man, what did you think about the Gary Russell whole Diaz fight, man?
Well, man, it's a good fight. Well, man, you know, I think it should have been longer. But turned out the way I thought it was going to turn out. Yep.
And as LeBron had asked earlier, man, what did you think? Another draw for Body Jack, man. You know, what do you think next, man?
What I think next? Oh, man. Well, it might be a little bit more to the coming, man. I think it's gonna be a little bit more better for him this time. You know what I mean? He really showed that he really made what he made of, you know? That's the main thing. Yep. Just getting out there, showing what he made of. If you get out there, show what he made of, then, you know, we go from there.
Yep. So you as a fan, would you want to see a rematch with Bottle Jack and Adonis Stevenson?
Yeah, I want to see that. I would love to see that. Yes, I do. I think it's going to happen, too. Yep. Yep. And we already know who's going to win. Who won the first one?
I know that you're thinking about Badu Jack here, but what's going on up there in Detroit, man? Any fights coming down the pike or anything about Clarissa?
Well, I'm waiting to hear from you. Well, you know, I'm waiting to hear from my friend K-9. I'm waiting to hear what his son come up. What he got coming up? I ain't talked to him lately, but I'm going to talk to him before Tuesday. And I'm going to be on the show Tuesday, you know, talk to y'all, greet y'all. I missed it last Tuesday. I was been kind of busy. Had to, you know, trying to move some things, get some things together in order, and then I'm working too. So, yeah. So, yeah. I'm going to talk to him Tuesday. Before Tuesday, I'm going to see what's going on. I'm going to be on the show Tuesday. You know, kick with y'all if it's okay.
All right, man. Well, hey, LeBron, just in case you didn't know who Tim is, Tim's been, he's up in Detroit. He's been around with us for quite some time. Old friend of the show. He goes all the way back.
Oh, man. I love this show, man. I love this show, man. Hey, man, I'm a fan of yours, man. You know, that my main good fan. Hey, man, you know what? It was a boxer. I just passed away, man, recently, man. Trey Waters, man. He used to be IBF junior middleweight champion, man. Remember him? I want to give my condolences to his family, man. I'm a good fan of his. And I'm a good fan of the sport, man. And I think, man, James, I thank y'all, man, for the insight, man, and keep me updated, man, with the sport, man, because I love boxing. You know, and I hate that what they're trying to do, man, to the Olympics for us, man, you know. But we're going to prevail. We're going to prevail.
All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you Tuesday. And, hey, it's always good talking to you, my man. You have a great night.
Oh, man, James. Thank you, man. Thank you, man. I love this show.
All right. Always good to hear from a fan. LeBron, you want to give us your last thoughts for the evening before we get out of here? Let everybody know where they can find you on social media and whatnot.
Yeah, just thank you, JK, and thanks, Scully, also for coming on, and our guest, Derek Webster. I have his fight coming on June 1st in Atlantic City, the Hall of Fame weekend, so go out and support if you can. And just keep supporting the sport. And shout out to Dave. If you're working, make that money, baby. And you can find me on Facebook. I'm Jabron Clement. That's J-A-B-R-E-N-C-L-E-M-O-N. JK, let them know where they can find you at.
You can find me on Facebook, on the Pugilist Corner, of course. We also put our podcast, The Weekend Wrap, is also on our Pugilist Corner page. We will be updating our website very soon. Those of you that have went to the Pugilist Corner, I will be working on that. And don't forget to catch us Tuesday at the Dog Pound with Canine Boxing, now presented by the Pugilist Corner. We'll definitely be talking with Miss Shelley Vincent this Tuesday. Hopefully, Mr. Gary Russell, and just check with us, and you can catch our lineup. So we look forward to talking about our great sport next week with everyone. And hey, have a great weekend, and don't forget to support your local boxing. Have a great night, everyone, and we look forward to talking to you again next week right here on The Weekend Wrap.